Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast. What are the most expansive and interesting appendices and epilogues in the books that we read? Well, we're going to be answering that and much more in a very unique episode of All Reading Counts. This is Systematic Geekology. I am one of your co-hosts, Joshua Noll, here with the one, the only, the great TJ Tiberius Juan Blackwell. And if you're like, man, why is he so great? Man, you clearly haven't read the appendices of your Bibles. It's about how TJ was hanging out with God in the beginning, right there in the appendix. No one ever reads that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we really are going to talk about some appendixes in the Bible and epilogues, maybe. Is the end of the book of Mark an epilogue written by someone else? I don't know. Maybe. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. Some of my favorite things to read come out of epilogues and appendixes and stuff like that. And sometimes they completely change a book. So usually with All Reading Counts, we like pick a kind of literature and we're like, we'll talk about this. Like we'll pick books and we're going to talk about Lord of the Rings. But this time we're going to do a little bit more vague. We, of course, do throw this up to our patrons. They had a few things to choose from. We could have been talking about internet articles or blogs or I forget what the other options were, but they voted on this and specifically said they want us to talk about Lord of the Rings appendix. So Nick Polk, be ready. We're going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. We're going to do it for you.
Which we could technically do, depending.
Yeah, a whole episode, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe more.
Yeah. Nick, join right now and we'll do it. Anyway, before we get anything else, we do have to shout out, what was the last kind of literature we read? I can go first because I think it'll be surprising to some people. I've been reading manga. Actually, I think that's what I said last time too, but this time it's the last time we recorded one of these. I was like, hey, I started at Kingdom Hearts because it's something I already liked. And TJ was like, you know, you probably could have done it with One Piece too. And I was like, yo, yeah, bet. Then I started reading One Piece manga. And yeah, that's the last thing I read. But instead of starting at the beginning, I'm just reading where I'm at. So I'm like reading Egghead Island manga specifically.
Yeah it's really
which
good.
Is great.
It's so good.
I love it. Actually, this might be my favorite island since Ace's execution. I'm not sure, but it might be. I loved Wano. Anyway, TJ, what's the last kind of literature that you read?
Same thing, same property.
Wait, like same exact thing, just different place in the series? Just the
most recent chapter.
Yeah, what arc are we on now?
Now we're in the God Valley flashback.
And I just can't wait for them to finally finish the manga and then and say, you know what? There's also an epilogue. And it's just as long as the others, actual series.
He's going to finish One Piece and immediately start Two Piece. We've known this.
praise God. Anyways, with that, if you're on a laptop, please consider rating and reviewing our show on Podchaser or GoodPod. That's going to help our show gain recognition, make it easier to find search engines like Google or maybe AOL. I don't know if that still exists, but maybe. We're probably helping that. If you're on your phone, though, consider rating, reviewing, or commenting on our show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's going to help prioritize our show in those apps' algorithms, which that's where most people listen to podcasts. So helps a lot. It's super quick. Takes like 10 seconds. It's free. So we appreciate all your help in advance. We thank you. We also want to do a thank you and a shout out to one of our sponsors. You can sponsor the show on Apple Podcasts, Captivate, or Patreon. Today, we're shouting out Jonathan Augustine. Jonathan, you're amazing. And remember, listeners, if you want your own shout out to be like Jonathan, you too can support our show for $3 a month on one of those three platforms, Apple Podcasts, Captivate, or Patreon. Also, we do have to let you guys know. Let me make sure I got this up for the YouTube people. Everything on our All Reading Counts merch. So there's a series you can follow down below. There will be a link to the playlist. You can find all the episodes in our All Reading Counts series. There's also going to be a link in the description for some of our merchandise with All Reading Counts. Anything you purchase there, or if you get the bonus episode on Patreon and you pay for it, all the funds that we get for All Reading Counts stuff, we actually donate to our public library. So the reason we do this series is to support literacy, and we do want to take those funds and help our public libraries as well. So if you're on YouTube, you can kind of see some of the merchandise that's on the website. I actually really, really like the design. We updated it recently, and I think it looks cool. Also, the new merch website just looks better, too.
I agree.
Yeah. So consider checking that out. And now we'll go ahead and jump into the episode proper. Starting with just kind of like, what do we mean by All Reading Counts and why we think it's important? We always start with this, but, you know, it's always someone's first episode, probably. For the most part, statistically speaking, it is always someone's first episode based on what I'm looking at. So, TJ, what do we mean by All Reading Counts? Why do you think it's important?
So, really, what spurned it, what really caused us to start doing this, because a lot of people don't consider audiobooks to count as reading. And we disagree. But we're extending that to, you know, other shorter form content that people might not consider reading. Poems, you know, novellas, just comic books, manga, those kinds of things that do often get discredited as reading. You know, in like second grade for your reading log, teacher's like, hey, that doesn't count. We don't agree. You can tell your second grade teacher that.
Go find them.
Yeah, write them an email.
Pretty sure my second grade teacher is Miss Reagan. I'm going to let you know, Miss Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what I think.
Mm-hmm. But we're trying to combat that with All Reading Counts. And we're also promoting reading as a whole because so many people have eschewed it for other forms of entertainment. But there's a lot of benefits to reading. Improve cognition, memory, all kinds of stuff. Josh, you have more benefits?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything that TJ said. Longevity of life actually is among the things there. Increases your vocabulary, your mental awareness, all that good stuff. And yeah, they've done the studies. They've shown that, scientifically speaking, comic books, audiobooks give you the exact same benefits as the other forms of reading that people more traditionally count as. Hey, if it helps, do it. And who cares what other people think?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, but I just want to reiterate what TJ said. It is a lot to do with like disabilities, and why I'm so passionate about it is, you know, people are like, oh, audiobooks don't count. And a lot of people, that's literally the only way they can read, or comic books, or this, or that can't count. And people who are on the spectrum, or people with ADHD, different stuff like that. Sometimes that's really the only thing they can read. And then to discount that makes them feel like they're not able to do this thing. When scientifically speaking, they get all the same benefit from what they're reading. And there's no reason you shouldn't count it. Yeah. I love doing the spill every episode. It's fun. Not every episode. If we did it every episode, I think it would get old. But every All Reading Counts episode.
Yeah. All the relevant episodes.
Yeah. So, TJ, what is your history when it comes to appendices and epilogues? Since that's our thing today. Did you always read these, or did you like used to skip those when you were a kid?
Never skip something. So the way I read everything, you know, growing up was from the library. And I didn't live, like, in a city or something. So, like, when I finished a book, I couldn't just take it back. It was a process. I had to either wait until the next school day if it was from the school library, or had to wait until my mom wanted to go back to the library to, you know, take it back. So, by the time I gave that book back, I read every inch of paper in it, including the appendices and especially the epilogues. I would never skip an epilogue. Are you crazy? But the appendices, for me, it's always, I learned quite a few words from books, including names and, you know, therefore foreign language like pronunciations vaguely, because, you know, they're often based on just non-English languages for fantasy novels, which is most of what I was reading growing up. So, of course, I was going to the appendix looking up how to say these names that I've never seen before, never seen that combination of letters. But appendices are a very important part of any young fantasy reader's journey.
I feel like I have a much weirder relationship to these things than TJ. I did not ever skip them, but when I was younger and, you know, maybe someone told me I had ADHD, but in our family, it wasn't like a real thing. So, we, you know, whatever. I never quite learned how to cope with it. So for a long time, if all my friend group was talking about a book, like let's say Lord of the Rings, I would almost exclusively read the appendix and epilogue because it's what I had the attention span to read. And then I would know enough stuff that other people didn't know that it really seemed like I read the book. So I didn't have to feel ashamed. So I did that as a kid. Then as I got older, I learned how to actually read and cope with some of my own disabilities. And I just never stopped reading the epilogue and the appendix because I grew up kind of like that's all I read. So I knew the importance of it, like a lot of information. That's the only place to find it. And then for a long time, I had this weird thing like where it was easy for me to read like theology books or books about the Bible commentaries and that kind of stuff. But I had a harder time reading like fiction. In a lot of those books, especially like one of my favorite Bibles, the New Jerusalem Bible, they do like abbreviations and stuff in the footnotes that doesn't really make sense unless you reference it with the appendix in the back that kind of explains what do these abbreviations and different things mean, which kind of solidified for me the importance of all that. So once I started actually reading more fiction, just kind of carried over. Yeah.
Hello, guys. I really hate to interrupt, but my name's TJ, and I'm here to tell you about our new merch. We have incredible new stuff with Fourth Wall. We have just partnered with them as a new store. They have a lot more to offer, which means we have a lot more to offer. We can now offer you beautiful Comfort Colors t-shirts. They're so comfy. I wear mine all the time, and we've got it all now. Cups, hats, backpacks, pajamas. If you want your Systematic Geekology pajamas, you know where to go. My personal favorite is actually our Throne of Geeks shirt. It is Comfort Colors, you know, blue, black, green, red, orange, and the shirts are just so nice. And the shirt itself, we've got the Throne of Iron geeked out because, you know, that's our brand. We've got Mjolnir on there, the Buster Sword, Trident. Basically, just the coolest weapons from our favorite properties are on the shirt instead of a bunch of normal boring swords from the boring series Game of Thrones. So check that out and thank you.
So, with that, TJ, clarify for everybody, what's the difference between an appendix, an epilogue, footnote, etc.?
Etc. is a term usually used in lieu of at all. So an appendix is additional matter at the end of a book. Traditionally, you can put the appendix in the front after the glossary. I've seen that once or twice. It's weird. I don't know why a publisher would clear that. Appendix goes in the back. But traditionally, and when I say traditionally, I mean by the word of Tolkien, it goes in the back, and it is additional content in the story that connect you more to the world. Usually it's something like that. A lot of the times it will be, you can have maps back there, you can have pronunciations of names back there. Basically any additional content that the author thought would be helpful for you to have with the book, that's what's going to be in your appendix. So, super helpful. I don't really see a reason not to read them unless you're just trying to burn through books. You know, just move on to the next one, sure. But sure. The epilogue, traditionally, is what the author will kind of pin on to the end of the story as like a additional resolution. So they feel as if they finished the story, and the epilogue is just kind of the happily ever after, if you will. Usually. Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes an epilogue will completely change a book, or sometimes it just kind of recontextualizes. Like a few of the examples I'm going to talk about throughout the episode, an epilogue is going to kind of change where, like, maybe the main story was about me and TJ. The epilogue's like, okay, but here's what's happening in the grander world because of what happened to Josh and TJ in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And then a footnote is when an author will, you know, decide if something needs additional clarification or reference. This doesn't normally happen in novels. Sometimes, rarely, but it's a lot more likely that you'll see it in like a translated poem. Basically anything that's been translated, that's where you're more likely to see a footnote because of translator's notes. Like, hey, yeah, there's like 14 words for this. This is why I chose this one.
Yeah. Like the New Jerusalem Bible is a collection of like Jewish and Hebrew scholars translating the Bible, not word for word, but like theme for theme, and trying to match the type of literature. So like if a psalm rhymes, they want to make sure it rhymes in the translation. There are some pages of that where the footnotes are just as big a section as the actual text.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge.
If you get into like, yeah, especially the Bible, but also like ancient poetry translations, like not even ancient, just like old English.
Beowulf.
Yeah. Beowulf is bad. Beowulf's bad about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. So that's where our footnotes come in for, you know, more scholarly minded people typically.
I wonder if Beowulf is the only text that Tolkien used footnotes for. Like, that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, maybe so. There are also endnotes, which are distinct from footnotes for some reason, because they specifically tend to be in the bottom margins of the page. And I thought, are seen as less relevant, but still so.
I thought they were like at the end of like a chapter.
I don't think they have to be.
I'm not sure what that is. Okay. So that's still in notes, but it's
still
just structured different.
Okay. Yeah,
because a lot of the books that I like that are like four perspectives of ecclesiology or whatever, like there's a whole series that I like to read that's like different perspectives from different Christian traditions on whatever. So they'll have like one person argue, then three other people will respond to his main article. And then at the end of the chapter will be all the footnotes or end notes that are like where they're all pulling from or when one person referenced another person, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that is specifically the case in like academic situations, at least from what I've seen.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah.
Anyway, I will say though, the one exception for me, I don't read the maps in the appendix. I'm not a very good visual like reader, I guess. So like, even like I could look all day at this like thing of Arda, and like if I try hard, I could see where Sam and them went on the map. But as I'm reading the story, nope, doesn't happen. Just does not help my brain.
I love it. I love it. This, my room in my apartment, you can't really tell. My room at home at my parents' house is covered in maps. Three of the four walls of my room are covered in maps, and not like fantasy maps either. I have one fantasy map, maybe two, hung up on my wall. And one of them is from Red Dead Redemption. So that's not a fantasy map. That's just Texas. That's Texas 200 years ago.
Funny. I will say, though, some of the Bible appendix, sometimes, like, I remember early on when I started looking at the maps, it did change some of how I read it just because of, like, seeing how, like, Paul's journey went. If you have, like, one of the maps that, like, with the path that shows like everywhere that he went in missionary, do you kind of realize that their whole world was around the Mediterranean Sea, basically? So like a lot of times when you're like, oh, they went to Rome and then they went to Athens, I'm like, wow, that's crazy. And then like you see it on the map and you're like, oh yeah, to them the world was like this little piece of the map by Mediterranean, like Americas and all this other stuff didn't exist. And it doesn't seem as vast when you see like the seas in the middle and they're kind of just doing like a loop, because in my mind, Europe, Africa, Asia, like those are completely different places, but he's just doing like this little loop.
Yeah, if they just had like some real good boats.
Yeah. Yeah.
You anyway. Save a lot of time. There was a ferry that went across the Mediterranean Sea.
Oh?
Yeah, that would have been super helpful.
Oh, I thought you were telling me there was one. You were telling me about your experience with a ferry on the Mediterranean Sea. I was like, I haven't heard this story.
No, not yet.
All right. So do you think, DJ, that epilogues or appendices are ever a sign that the author was just unable to explain the characters well, wrap up the story well in the main event? Like, do we need the map because they really just didn't explain it well enough for us to visualize it? Or, like, I don't know. Why do they do this if they already have it in the story?
So, I think, especially for an author like Tolkien, making the map will help you not only contextualize the story, but also conceptualize the story. So it's helpful as a writing aid. When I've made a couple different like custom campaign settings for D&D games, I always start with the map. It just helps me. Tolkien, way smarter than me. He probably just really needed his world to be visual. He wanted people to know how smart he was. Mm-hmm. So he created a world. But typically I feel like the author won't put that stuff in an appendix because they couldn't fit it into the story. It's more like it wasn't necessary to fit it into the story.
But they still wanted you to have it.
They wanted you to know, though. Yeah.
Like a nice little prep present.
Yeah, because you won't find something in an appendix that's like, oh, by the way, the emperor's mom and dad tried to kill him when he was four. That's not going to be in the appendix. That's going to be somewhere in the emperor's exposition.
Although with Tolkien, you might find out that the emperor's great, 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 great grandfather was murdered by the queens. Yeah, there might be something like that. Like,
yeah, special
500
case.
Years ago.
Special case. He wrote a lot more extra stuff about his world than most people.
Yeah. He knew what happens at the beginning of time in Arda. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's different.
That's a little different. But that's what I feel like it mostly is like extra information that wasn't necessary, but it's nice to have.
Yeah. I wish the biblical authors knew more about this. Maybe the book of Matthew could have left that genealogy for the appendix.
Yeah.
That'd have been great.
That would have been great.
Actually.
Right where it belongs.
Not in the front.
Not in the front.
Yeah. Someone go get them. But do comic books or video games ever do anything similar to an epilogue? So, like, is the bonus level of, like, a Sonic video game or, like, you know, the comic book last frame of Dr. Doom showing up? Is that the same thing as an epilogue?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, in some cases, obviously, there are different writing styles for comic books. They vary greatly. Usually, I'll find for a big event like Secret Wars, Infinity War, Blackest Night, you know, big stuff. They will have like an epilogue of how the world is, you know, going after the big event happens. Most comic books, I feel like, don't. They'll have a little preview of, you know, what's going on in either other comic books or the next issue. In the back, typically. Video games are different. Different but the same. So a lot of games will do that like bonus level. And a bonus level is not the same as an epilogue. A lot of story-driven games have epilogues where they're covering the same subject matter as a book. But for your, I'll call them arcade games, you know, they'll also have bonus levels that aren't contributing to the story, but they are contributing to the gameplay because that's what it's for. It's a video game. In Street Fighter, which famously had no or very little story for the first 10 years of its life. There are bonus levels if you play arcade mode because you get to beat up a truck. That's the bonus level. Yeah. You're not fighting a player or a computer. You're fighting a truck and it doesn't do anything. You just beat it up and score points.
Yeah. 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 I think the epilogue usually is within the game. And maybe like the appendix is more like, so like Indiana. It's different from like arcade games where you had bonus levels to like now modern games just will do DLC. So like Indiana Jones and the Great Circle released the Order of Giants. And it's more like an appendix because it explains kind of what happens to the giants. Like it was something that was in the video game. There was no need for that to be part of the story. But they still gave it to us so we could learn a little bit more about the giants and play through some stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it'll so a lot of it's not as much anymore, which really stinks. But, you know, growing up, you know, 2000s, 2010s, a lot of games will have bonus content, which is concept art, galleries, that kind of thing. And that really feels like an appendix to me. My favorite one ever is the 2004 GameCube release specifically, just because that's what I had, of Peter Jackson's King Kong, the movie, the video game, because their bonus content gallery was a museum and you could walk through it and look at the stuff that you unlock.
Sick.
So good. It was so good.
My favorite, surprising to no one. One of the times when we were waiting 5 million years for Kingdom Hearts 3, they did like the one of the re-releases for Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 and all the games in between. Actually came in like a little white, like hardcover book. And you have like the game in there, but then there's like all these pages of concept art from like before they ever did the first game. And I love that stuff. And that's definitely falls under the appendix. Like, it's literally book pages at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of games could, like, learn a lesson from the appendix. And a lot of RPGs, you'll find, you know, journals, logbooks, books in world. If you're playing, you know, a big one like Xenoblade, Skyrim, Oblivion.
A lot of zombie games do this really well.
Yeah. But they just let me have, like, a little option on the main menu to go read all the books that I've found in the game so far.
Yeah.
And like give us a library.
Kingdom Hearts. You find all Anselm's reports and then later you learn it's not Anselm, but who cares? And it doesn't. It explains who the Heartless are, all this other background stuff that the 10-year-old me didn't care about, but adult me who's still playing the same game is like, yeah, I'm going to read all of these. This is great.
Oh, I was the opposite, dude. I used to, every time I found a book in any game, I read the whole thing. Now, I'm a lot more likely to skip.
Yeah. What's funny is that's how I learned about a lot about Marvel characters. Marvel Ultimate Alliance did that. Something similar.
Oh, yeah. They did a great job. Yeah.
I learned so much about the character. That's actually why I got into Marvel comics, I think. And before then, I was like, I exclusively want Batman content. And then I was like, changed my mind. Marvel Ultimate Alliance is right. These characters are.
And they are. And it is.
Yeah. What about movies? Like the after credit stuff that Marvel started doing? Is that more an epilogue or an appendix? Like at the end of Thunderbolts, like we see Fantastic Four showing up. So it's kind of like opening the world up. It's like a brief scene.
Yeah, I don't consider that an appendix. That's more like a teaser.
Mm-hmm. Maybe like a footnote. End note. That's the end note.
End By note the way, the Fantastic Four.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I love it. Okay, so as far as actual books, epilogues, appendices, what are some of the ones that stand out the most to us? Yeah,
you to me specifically, just because you wrote it down, I want to talk about it. Aragorn's Guide to Alagaesia, loved it.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that counted. I was actually going to ask you, does that or like Fantastic Beasts that J.K. Rowling did, where it's like a separate book, but it definitely functions as an appendix. What does it fall
into? Well, I agree with you. It is a separate book, and Aragorn's Guide to Alagaesia, I think, is more like an appendix than Fantastic Beasts, because Fantastic Beasts really has its own narrative that it's pushing. Yeah, it does. But Aragorn's Guide, it's just, to me, it's really nostalgic. It's special to me. Also, really annoying to me, because I'm barely younger than Christopher Paolini, and I found that out, because I'm pretty sure I was reading Aragorn when I was like 12, 13.
I told you about the stupid thing my brother did, right?
Not yet.
Do you want me to tell you now? I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
sure.
It's I think you'll find it funny and also want to punch Matt. it won't let me change. Okay, there. My brother used to be obsessed with those books when they were coming out, and he wrote a letter to Christopher Paolini, and Christopher wrote him back. Matt had a letter handwritten by him and signed it, everything, and he lost it. I'm like, Matt,
that's crazy.
Dude, that you had crazy. No idea. You have no idea. It's like, this guy, like, now it's huge. Like, back when Aragorn first came out, people were like, and now, guy's huge.
Yeah. And his other books are really good. His sci-fi stuff's great. Just for clarity, I am a good bit younger than him, but he wrote Aragorn when he was 16.
What?
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah, and you can kind of tell if you go back now, but it was still a great book. Anyway, it really just gives you more of what we wanted. Because he was so young when he was writing the series, there's a lot of stuff that felt like it got left unsaid, and that's what Aragorn's Guide really helps with, and I think it's wonderful.
I actually haven't read that one. I just recently finished Inheritance Cycle, like last year.
What?
So I feel like I should pick that up. Yeah, I never read it. Until you and Christian mentioned it like several times on two different episodes, and I was like, maybe I should finally read this.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it a lot.
And audiobooks are good.
I bet they are. Yeah. Especially being able to, because that's the appendices of those books have the spells pronunciations in them. that's super helpful.
That does seem important.
Especially when he titled the second book one of the spells, or the third book, Prisoner. That was pretty funny.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny of him.
So, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I didn't think there was a narrative at all. I thought it was literally just a picture of the creature and then a list of like what that creature is and does and how that's born.
Well, they rewrote it. They're releasing like the movie books
too. Oh, okay. Okay. So, yeah, I was thinking of like back in the day, because it was like something that was like mentioned in one of the stories or whatever. It was like one of Harry's textbooks. And they released this, and I loved it. Actually, when it was that and not the actual story of the movies or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome.
I like being like, and literally just a frog has to sit on some eggs. That's how I get a basilisk. That's it.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Sick.
It's really special. Wildly it reminds me of like the dragonology book that treat dragons like real animals.
Yeah. I love that.
Love that.
Yeah.
So basically what we're saying in this episode is that appendices are for nerds.
Geeks. Geekologists, specifically, who want to dig deeper.
Yeah, it's true. So they count.
Yeah. Well, and since specifically Jonathan Augustine was the patron who was like, we had a vote and there was a tie on what we should do for this episode. But he left in the comments, please talk about the Lord of the Rings appendix. That's what won the tie. No one commented about the other thing. We just wanted to take a moment to ask you all to consider sponsoring our show. You can do so by becoming a member in the website down in the show's description. It takes a lot to keep this show running as far as editing equipment, paying the site that platforms our show to all the different mediums where you listen to your podcast, going to events. There's a lot of cost behind this. And I was thinking of the most fun way to do this ad, and I was going to do like, you know, one of those songs where it's like, there's a log on the lake. And then by the end, it's like there's a speck in the eye of the flea on the log on the lake or something. Then I realized that would just take too long and I don't want to bore you guys. So I'm going to list some of the benefits you can get for being a member as a thank you to those who do take some of their funds to help sponsor our show. At the free tier, you get some perks, including like free episodes. Yeah, you don't even have to pay to get extra content that goes along with our annual theme or even in collaboration with the Rethinking Faith. We're going to be doing Rethinking Comics and you can get that on our website if you want to follow that series. As you move up to some of the paid tiers, you get access to exclusive merch only for our sponsors. You get access to the bonus questions we do each thing and all kinds of things that are like shout outs for all tiers. You can get a shout out on the episode. All of the tiers come with some incredible benefits. As you go through some of the different ones moving up, you know, you get different percent off of our merchandise. We just straight up give you money towards purchasing stuff. Some of the tiers just get $10 a month to buy stuff from us. We do free giveaways. Some of the tiers come with birthday presents, Christmas presents, free t-shirt for our members. There are lots of things that we do because we just want to show our appreciation for those who are able to take their funds and sponsor our show. But we also want to remind you, whether or not you can financially support the show, we appreciate everyone who takes their time to listen to this. Remember that verse that's like, perhaps you're here for a time such as this. Well, perhaps you're here for a time such as sponsoring our show, or perhaps you're not here to listen to ads and I should wrap this up. So that's how you win. If you're on Patreon and you see a tie and you want your side to win, leave an interesting comment. That's the tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. So Lord of the Rings appendix, it's literally how we get the entire show. Rings of Power is literally only based off the appendix. It gives you like genealogies. It gives you like history of the character, history of the rings, all kinds of just crazy, wild and out stuff. EJ, have you read the appendix to the Lord of the Rings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a long time, but I have, and it's because it's interesting because like there's a little appendix in Two Towers and Fellowship, and Return of the King, and the appendix is like 100 pages or something. It's just so much, but that took me by surprise the first time I was reading them.
Isn't the Tree of Gondor? Isn't the its entire history is just in the appendix, right? Like mm-hmm. how it actually came from Numenor and all that.
Yeah, the entire appendix. The appendix is just way more content. And then there's the Silmarillion.
Yeah, which functions as like a appendix almost. Yeah, with some really good short stories sprinkled in. Oh, it's like if you take appendixes and just combine it with short story anthology, I think that's what the Silmarillion actually is.
Yeah, and it's great. Perfect.
One of my favorite books, actually. All right. So some of the other ones that stand out to me, one of my all-time favorite, I'm going to call it an epilogue, is Screwtape Proposes a Toast. I'm not sure it counts as an epilogue. C.S. Lewis releases this separate from the Screwtape Letter. But typically now, if you get a copy of the Screwtape Letters, it's going to have that at the end. So that's where I'm like, I think it falls in the same category. It's like a separate chapter. And whereas the book Screwtape Letters is a series of letters from Screwtape to his nephew. Or am I getting that right? Wrong. Is it Wormwood to Screwtape or is it Screwtape to Wormwood?
You ask me. Don't ask me, Mr. T.S.
I'm pretty sure Screwtape is writing to Wormwood. Anyway, at the end of the book, yeah, because it's Screwtape. Okay, anyway, at the end of the book, when you get to Screwtape Proposes a Toast, this is C.S. Lewis just like, oh, by the way, at the college graduation for demons, Screwtape is there. This is like toast, like, hey, we're doing so great. Here's what we're doing. And he gives an entire thing of like, here's what's going to happen to the education system and how we're going to get people to be polarized and turn against one another in politics, even though it's not about that at all. And you're like, huh. Like, I dare someone to read this. Like, it's literally just C.S. Lewis describing what modern day America is going to look like. Like, that's all it is. And you're like, what? he pretty much, when he talks about the education system, Screwtape's like, here's what I think we should do to their schools. And it's almost exactly the No Kid Gets Left Behind program. Like, it's verbatim, pretty much. You're like, is Lewis a prophet? Like, it's wild. Vastly different from the other letters, which is why it's separate. But I think it's a must read, personally. Yeah. Then a weird comic book one.
Oh, I haven't read Sandman Overture, so I'm going to take my earbuds out, and you just need to wave at me really hard when you're done.
I won't say anything about it. Okay. I'll just say it is interesting that Neil Gaiman actually just straight up writes, also just does an entire epilogue at the end. He's like, by the way, Sandman was such a good book, but wait, there's more. I think that's what an epilogue really is. It's the, but wait, there's more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also really
and
good.
Neil Gaiman really just loves writing his stories.
Yeah. And I feel like Sandman's one of those where, like, yes, it's a comic book, but it's also just straight up a novel. Like, it's so good.
Yeah. it is. It's special.
Yeah. Other ones that stand out to me, there's a lot of theology ones that I could bring up. Even Forgotten God by Francis Chan. I know a lot of more progressive Christians don't like Francis Chan as much as I do. Because, a lot of his theology I disagree with. But Forgotten God, he talked about how, like, we claim we have the Holy Spirit living in us, and then we just don't act like it. I mean, his epilogue in that book moved me to tears and had a moment where it really helped me overcome some of my own mentality over the injuries I've had. That's how I'll describe it. Yeah. One of my favorite scholarly works is Who Wrote the Bible by Richard Elliot Friedman. He is a Jewish scholar, and he's just talking about the Pentateuch, really. But in the epilogue, he kind of has like a verbatim, because he goes through like the documentary hypothesis where like five different sources wrote different parts of the book, and some redactors came in and edited them into the books we have today. In the epilogue, he shows verbatim, like, okay, here's this source, here's what they wrote, and it kind of breaks down the Bible into the different sources that he's talking about in a way where I can look at it and go, okay, this is why you think this was written by a different source, why you think that these is the same story written by two different people. And then after reading that, now when I read the Bible, I'm like, yeah, I just read the same story twice, and yet somehow I would have never noticed that if it wasn't for the epilogue in Richard Elliot Friedman's Who Wrote the Bible. I'm assuming you haven't read that. Have you read Kindred by Octavia Butler?
I haven't.
You should. Tiffany read it, really liked it too. But you should
read it. Tiffany can read?
Yeah, she's got the Kindle Unlimited thing now. So now it's like, I'm just constantly hearing about these books that I might never read. But Kindred is different. I will read Kindred because it's a sci-fi African-American kind of thing. Octavia Butler writes a cool story. It involves time travel. The way the book ends, because I don't want to ruin it, because I actually do want TJ and other people to read this one. But the way the book originally ends, it shows the physical harm done to the married couple who keeps going back in time and seeing like enslaved people in America back in the past, and how they were physically hurt from it and their lives were changed at the end of the story. The epilogue shows them revisiting the place where someone was buried that they met in the past, and it really opens up to the whole of America. And kind of ask this question of like, will America ever heal from what we've done? And without that epilogue, it's like a really personal, intimate, cool story with these characters. But then the epilogue makes it, this is all of our story. It's just really cool thing that she does.
There's a Kindred graphic novel.
What? Will, if you're listening.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of want to check that out now. Yeah. So I guess those are my main shout outs. Yeah, I was trying to figure out what were there any other ones that I wanted to make sure we shout out. I think those are the main ones for me. That I'm like, these are some awesome epilogues, awesome appendixes. Obviously, there are others that
I will say, but just real quick, To Sleep in a Sea of Stars, which is Pisser's Paley's first foray into sci-fi, had a really cool appendix where he had drawn some schematics of how these ships were, built and how their technology works. That was super fun. I like that a lot.
Yeah. How do we feel about some of the books that are basically the appendixes written by other people? You know what I mean? Like, because I know the Inheritance Cycle has a couple of these. Obviously, Lord of the Rings is if you actually have a series of six that other people wrote that are just like, here's what's going on in Lord of the Rings and explaining it and kind of doing like basically an appendix book. It's really just a money grab. I like some of them.
This is a commentary. It can be helpful. I typically don't.
Is it the same thing as a biblical commentary then?
Yes.
Is this just the Bible commentary version of...
Especially in that case.
Sick.
Especially in the case of Lord of the Rings.
I love a good Bible commentary. I like it more when they actually include the scripture, so I'm not having to like reference back and forth. I can just read the commentary.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who write commentaries are overestimating how large my desk is.
Yeah. I want to kind of like go get my Oxford like English commentary of the Bible. It's like,
because like you expect me to have your commentary and also the Bible open together so I can like do my reference.
Yeah, no.
Not like my time. I don't have like a drafting desk. It's not layers.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not Shrek. I love them. But some of it when it's like about TV shows and movies too, though, are fun though. Like I have the Doctor Who commentary appendix basically up there. It's just stuff about Doctor Who. All right. So what do you think is it that draws us into that desire to stay a little bit longer, you know, for the epilogue or to look a little bit more into the details? Like, what about these stories really draw us in enough that we want some stuff?
Just that investment, you know, by the time you finish a book, well, and there are two scenarios. By the time you finish a book, you've already spent so much time with it, usually that you just want to get as much time as you can out of it. So you'll read the appendix. Even if there wasn't anything particularly confusing in the book, you'll read the appendix. Or in Tolkien's case, where the appendix is just a lot more story.
You're absolutely going to read it.
Yeah. You're absolutely going to read it. And if you're listening to this and thinking, I didn't read the appendix, you should. Of Return of the King, you should read at least Appendix A and B.
Correct.
And learn about Helm Hammerhand, because he's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Also, it'll make that one anime film make a lot more sense.
But that's typically what it is. Otherwise, it's like you're reading the appendix because you were confused about something and hoping for more answers, like in the Bible.
Yeah. I'll say that's worse in most cases. Like, if I'm confused enough that I'm reading it just because I hope that it's going to make sense, maybe not a great book.
Yep.
Maybe.
But usually for me, it's the first one.
Yeah. Bam. I do want to say, though, because like with the Bible, there are some things that like, it irritates me how some people treat some of this added stuff as just as important as the Bible, like the maps or, you know, the verse numbers or the little headings in their Bible. And a lot of this stuff is done kind of help in translation, but in translation, they're also interpreting what they want you to think the meaning of scripture is. And when you get something like the Bible, it's like, this is supposed to be a sacred book. And then all of a sudden we're adding stuff to it. We're adding the maps, we're adding subtitles, we're adding verse numbers. To me, it irks me when people treat that stuff as just as sacred as the words, because, you know, I think the actual words of the Bible are sacred. All that other stuff, cool, that's somebody's opinion. I feel free to argue with it one way or the other, because that's not part of the Bible, right? I don't think the same issue occurs with other texts, but maybe the problem is it's distracting rather than this part isn't sacred. It's more distracting from what the actual message of the book is. So maybe that does still exist. Does that exist in stuff like Beowulf and all that, where like maybe adding some of the stuff that we add distract from what it's actually trying to say?
Yeah. Well, no one tries to write an epilogue for Beowulf, because that would be stupid.
Yeah.
But you know, there are some translations that are looked upon pretty unfavorably because of that same type of thing, where they're trying to create their own meaning for something.
Yeah.
Or at least reinforce a possible meaning.
Maybe that's a good reason for endnotes too, because like sometimes too many footnotes does get distracting, or like, or makes it look overwhelming. It's like, what? Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're reading like a split copy of an ancient poem where you've got English on one side and the original on the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of text. A lot of text on a page.
Have you seen those Bibles that have like four different translations, like NLT, NASB, King James, or like something else, like all in like one thing?
No, I never will, hopefully.
Yeah, I like the concept of comparing it, because I want to be like, oh, why did you translate it this way? Why did you translate it that way? But then like actually opening it, looking at it, I'm like, nope,
that too much on one page. Thing that should be reserved for when you have one of each, or technology.
Yeah, technology's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because online reading still counts.
Yeah. Yeah. I can just open four translations of the Bible on this screen and have one in each corner.
Or what's really fun is if you have a it's not the Blue Letter Bible app. There's an app that I have that's a Bible app that I can literally highlight a word and it'll like pull up references where I can see literally how everybody translates.
Mm-hmm.
The actual thing. Logos Bible, the Logos Bible app. It's awesome. It also has commentaries and stuff in it that I can download. So I can just like highlight whatever and just look through the references. Way easier than having like five commentaries and several versions of the Bible on my desk. That doesn't work. But having it in an app, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, DJ, what's our main takeaway with epilogues, appendices, all that? Is it just that they count or people should read them because it enhances their reading or?
Mm-hmm. I think the point is not only do they count, but I think you should read them because the author put it in there for a reason.
Yeah.
He wants you to read it. Or she.
Yeah.
They want you to read it.
I think for me, in the case that like you're reading it because you're confused and the work didn't make sense, I actually don't think you need to read it in that case. I feel like you didn't even need to finish the book. I'm one of those where I'm like, if it's not fun, unless I'm doing it for school, why am I still reading this? But if it's like you really appreciate it and you enjoy like Tolkien's work, yeah, he had that there because it was something important to him to understand the world he created. And if you connected with his story, then I think you kind of, not that you owe him that respect, but maybe a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Anyway. That's just where I'm at with it. So I hope you guys enjoyed this. Stick around for the appendix to this episode on Patreon. We'll be asking a bonus question for people who either already patrons or if you just want to do a one-time purchase, you can do that. And the funds, again, will go to our local libraries because we're doing this to promote literacy and literacy is awesome. So with that... All right, TJ, do you have, before we do anything else, a recommendation for our listeners or anything important, maybe?
Well, I did mention it earlier, and I really think if you're into sci-fi, you should check out To Sleep in a Sea of Stars. I think it's a really interesting world that Paolini's building, and this is not the first time I've recommended it. So check it out. Let me know what you think about his, you know, first foray into a new field.
I will, actually. I'm really interested.
Yeah. I bought it when released, which is like probably one of three times that I've done that in my life.
Hmm. That was a pretty high recommendation. All right.
Pretty good.
I don't know, for me. You know what? It's not tough. Read the light novel of Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories. That's my recommendation.
Yeah.
Because we're supposed to be books that are different than the kind of literature we talked about. I don't think there's an epilogue in it, so you're safe.
Yeah, that's also like
Chain of Memories.
The only comprehensible way to get the story of Chain of Memories.
It really is. I mean, the manga makes sense, but the light novel is just the best way to get the story, actually. And it's a hard story to understand because it's about memory loss. So it's like, yeah, really hard to write that in a way that's comprehensive.
Yeah, but it feels like they're trying to go beyond unreliable narrator and they're trying to impose unreliable reader.
Yeah. Unreliable narrator, reader, correspondence.
You feel like it's my fault.
Existence. It's everybody's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the story though. It's so good. Yeah. Also, for those who aren't on YouTube and haven't seen yet, the All Reading Counts merch, you can get a t-shirt, there's a long sleeve shirt, there's a hoodie, there's even a wine glass. All of it, I think, is pretty reasonably priced, or as reasonably as we can price it. And again, yeah, any profit we make, we're going to donate directly to public libraries. It's really important to us, so consider it. Link will be in the show notes. If you're on a laptop, please consider rating and reviewing our show on Podchaser or on GoodPod. It's going to help our show get recognized in search engines like Google. If you're on your phone, consider rating and reviewing or commenting on our show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That'll help prioritize our show in those apps. And that's where most people listen to podcasts, so that's important. And thank you again to our sponsors, especially Jonathan Augustine. Remember, you guys can sponsor our show for $3 a month or more on Apple Podcasts, Captivate, or Patreon. If you want your own shout-out, sponsor over there. Be like Jonathan. And, you know, you can listen to all of our All Reading Counts episodes with a link that's down below in the description. And remember, we're all a chosen people, a geekdom of freaks.
Hey friends, it's your pal Will Rose here, and let me break the fourth wall a moment and look directly at you through the camera or speak directly to you in your earbuds. Yep, I'm talking to you, Susie. You too, Chad. You can now support Systematic Geekology on Fourth Wall. That's a website. You'll find all of our episodes, incredible merch like shirts and hoodies and mugs. Chad, I would love to see you in one of those shirts out in the wild.
You get bonus episodes. We answer bonus questions. We have special shout outs. We have certain episodes that you pick. So you help us create and curate the content that we put out for the world to hear. You even get free merch.
And you can support the show at different levels. You could join at the free level. Yep, we love free members, free support. Join it. Or you could become a sidekick for as little as $5 a month. You could join the elves and dwarves for $10 a month. You could become a wizard for $15 a month, or you could go to divinity school and become a cleric for $20 a month. And that's way cheaper than going to seminary, believe me. Or at $25 a month, you could become a superhero. And let me just say, we love all of our listeners, whether you support us at the free level or the superhero level. We love you. We love geeking out with you. Like, support, share the show. Love you.
Hi, friends. It's Laura here, and I just wanted to say thank you for listening to our show. Systematic Geekology is a part of a larger podcast network called the Anazal Podcast Network. Dummy for Theology is Joshua Noel's show discussing different theological topics from various perspectives and attempting to give people more questions than answers. My Seminary Life is Brandon Knight's show. It started as him going through what he was learning in seminary, and after he graduated, he's been doing independent studies and has a lot of fun series like on hermeneutics, Bonhoeffer Summer, and worship. And then Friday Night Frights is a monthly show with Christian Ashley and Joe Day. They have a vote on the Systematic Geekology Facebook group to choose a topic each month and discuss everything from cryptos to ghosts to aliens to serial killers and more. So we hope you'll give it a listen, and thanks for being part of what we're putting out there.